Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Woman Splain. Today, we are discussing a topic near and dear to our hearts. Also been very hot in the news lately.
Yeah, very topical.
Fertility, and specifically fertility treatments, from both the perspective of sort of general market growth as well as investment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we'll touch on a couple of fertility startups and just how femtech now is a growing market, especially for venture capital and growth equity and PE as well. We'll mention some examples, talk about, you know, egg freezing, IVF, and women in the workplace, and we'll end there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think let's start with the growing popularity of egg freezing.
Mm-hmm.
So fertility clinics like Spring Fertility are seeing a huge uptick in demand. In 2023, nearly 30,000 cycles of egg freezing were reported, and then now is, which is a 300% increase from 2015.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
That's huge. And I know maybe like 20, 30 years ago, the average age to freeze eggs was 39, and now it's around 30. So there's definitely a lot more demand for the product.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of these new companies are increasing the access and then actually doing the supply too at like Spring.
Yeah, absolutely. And corporate benefits have played a huge role in that trend. So companies like Amazon, Forbes, and Starbucks now offer fertility benefits.
That's great.
Which is awesome, including egg freezing as part of their packages. So that's also a huge reason for the age going down.
Yeah.
Because I think women see it as like, well, like I work at this company, it's literally free. Like what is the downside of me potentially having frozen, like to freeze my eggs? Because it is, it's hugely expensive. It's somewhere between $10,000 to $20,000.
Very expensive out of pocket.
Yeah, to do it, which is just unaffordable for most people generally, but certainly people in their 20s.
Right. Exactly.
So having like a company like providing that, and then even if you do leave the company, you do have to pay for just like the eggs, like the frozen eggs generally to be maintained. But it's only about $500 a year, so that's a pretty cheap cost. Even if you're like, you pay out of pocket in 5 years when you leave, but generally having and also just like the access to and the number of clinics that have occurred, like Spring and Maven, that have popped up everywhere, especially in urban centers, have been a huge part of that. But generally too, back in the, 5 years ago, only 5% of employers covered any fertility benefits, and now one in five employers cover fertility benefits, including egg freezing. And they have, on average, doubled the number of rounds of IVF that they cover.
That's a huge win for women in the workplace. That's awesome.
Awesome.
And you can kind of see also, like, we're, you know, in our late 20s now, and that's something that, you know, we talk about with our friends, and that's extremely important. And especially if you have a full-time job, it's really hard to kind of think about, okay, how do I plan out my life when I'm working, you know, 60, 70 plus hours a week? And do I have to kind of put my life on hold? And so the fact that employers are covering more of these treatments is incredible.
Absolutely.
It's awesome. I think like 1 out of 8 women have trouble kind of conceiving naturally.
Generally, one in eight women have fertility problems, and 1 in 6 couples. Really high.
Yeah.
I mean, really high for a first or a second child, too. And then also just generally the average age to have children now, the average age to purchase a home, I mean, the accessibility. And I think, too, I mean, your 30s are such a key part of your career. Actually, like, Ingenue has a great quote about this where she's like, literally women's biology and needs are completely in diametric opposite of your career. Like, your 30s and your early 30s specifically are usually like such a key point of your career trajectory.
Yeah.
At that point, it really is where you like completely speed up. You can really kind of rise or fall.
You're at that like middle point of becoming a manager and then progressing.
Exactly. And it's also usually you have the largest percentage increase in your income from about 30 to 37, that percentage increase. And then usually like it will continue to raise, but not the same clip at all. So where basically you reach in your 30s is really determinative of how much money you will have, how much wealth you will build. And at this point, you know, that's obviously when you need to have children. If you're going to have children from a biological standpoint, it's also often when your parents need caring for. Actually, millennials are the first generation that what they're calling us, like the sandwich generation, where because both our parents and us are having kids later, we're the first generation to have to care for ailing parents while young children in diapers. And so like that's extremely difficult on like just your career and your life. And we're also the first generation to move far from our parents. Mm-hmm. And so there are often like, you know, just travel like necessities, mm-hmm. also extra expenses in terms of elder care.
Yeah.
And so having the ability to have more flexibility about when you get to time your children, just from like a perspective of that, is a huge win for women.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's awesome that employers are listening, and of course the rise in just access. You mentioned the out-of-pocket costs are, you know, only when you're for extorting, and you mentioned like $500 a year, which in comparison to the actual process, it's, you know, negligible. But then there are also issues too, because employers do cover, and people that don't have, you know, white collar jobs are kind of excluded from this. I read somewhere, it was like, in 2021 or two, only 5% of Black women had frozen their eggs, yeah. for that year. And lower percentage for Hispanic and Latina woman as well. And so there's that disparity. And I think the first step is definitely having the employers kind of increase access, but also a lot of these other type of startups and companies that are rising and more funding going towards them, I think is also a right direction.
Yeah, totally. I mean, now there is so, I mean, the amount of venture funding that's increased, mm-hmm. and focus on fertility, something that we've mentioned in our previous episodes as well. But like Maven Clinic is the first fertility unicorn. Which is really exciting. Mm-hmm. And they were like the first real like fertility focused clinic. Spring is also a huge one, also mm-hmm. venture-backed. And then also there are a litany of, I would call them like fertility services benefits, mm-hmm. like companies, for example, that store eggs or like egg freezing. That's a big one.
Yeah.
Companies that also provide like the hormone shots as well. And then the companies are also, there are more like the instruction for mm-hmm. like the hormone shots and the process are like extremely difficult. And so there are a lot of startups around the education and providing and prescription mm-hmm. of the different types of hormone shots. And there's also a lot of fertility services that are like before IVF. So like when they say like 1 in 8 women who need fertility services, that's not all of them need IVF.
Right.
A lot of them are like either in vitro fertilization is a big one too. And that's sort of a step before you get to IVF. But there's also things like women who have to take like an estrogen shot because mm-hmm. they don't ovulate on time, things like that. Yeah. Or like they have to take like a pill to time the amount of pregnancy, and it's more of like an issue with their hormone levels than it is their physical body.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of it in between that as well, which is good to know, honestly. And obviously wasn't available like even 10 or 20 mm-hmm. years ago. And so there are a lot of companies within that phase too, which is really interesting.
The market is huge, I think. Yeah, 10 years ago, the market was $6 billion, and they're projecting by 2020, what year are we at? 2028, it would double at like 17 or 18 billion.
That's wild.
Which is a big market that a lot of investors are looking into. As you mentioned, Maven, that was kind of like the first unicorn. They offer a lot of different services beyond just egg freezing and IVF. And I read recently that they actually just got new funding, Series F, $125 million, and they are led by like Sequoia, General Catalyst, et cetera. And one new department that they have is focused on menopause and midlife.
Really?
And they've seen 400% increase in just like the participation and the usage of that. So I think that's also something that's super interesting that obviously I don't ever really think about, but that's a huge market that's really untapped.
It is a huge market. It is a huge market.
Yeah.
And it's also, women live so much longer than men mm-hmm. also, and like generally, and our lifespans have expanded so much. So they say like Generation Alpha, which is the one before like the current generation, basically the one after Gen Z, they will live until like they're 85. Like their average life expectancy will be like 85.
And now it's like what, 70
something?
And right now it's
73 or something.
Yeah.
And for women it'll probably be longer. And so like, and most women go into menopause around 55. So it's like 40 years of postmenopausal life. And really recently, like menopausal care was effectively none. And it was more like just like hormone patches and shots. And vast majority of women actually can't take because there are so many side effects, like migraines or debilitating. If you have any risk of cancer in your family, which like, is that everyone? I feel like everyone has risk of cancer. Or like can't, right? Like you, like it's dangerous to take sometimes because of like the hormonal imbalance. Mm-hmm. And also like, also, Medicare and Medicaid often don't cover it. And so if you, you know, especially the elderly, like if their insurance isn't covering it and they're on a fixed income, a lot of times don't have access to it. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's going to be expansion within what like Medicaid and Medicare will cover too, which is good. So I think a lot of the reasons, I mean, there's a lot of reasons that fertility care has increased in terms of employee or benefit, but a lot of it too is just like there's increased access and demand. So if there's no demand for something, like an employer's not going to pay for it. But if there's increased access and demand for fertility care and it makes sense to them, then they will. So, so I love to see that, honestly. And I also think, you know, because we're living so much longer, we're going to end up working longer too.
Yeah.
So, just from like a necessity perspective.
Yeah.
And like, honestly, like if our, especially if our retirement age, I mean, increases from what, like 65 to 75, something like that, which does not seem unreasonable. That will be 20 years of women working in a postmenopausal world. And like, that's really difficult on your body to be able to manage that. Yeah. And especially when you're very senior in your career. So like, I love the fact that we are now looking at like women's like, hormones and bodies, like just differently than men's because they're so much more complicated.
Yeah.
So.
And we've seen a rise of just femtech focused VC funds as well.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's awesome.
Which is awesome. And yeah, I know BBG Partners, who like specifically do like female and minority owned, they're like on their third round. They just raised it, which is really exciting and closed that. And there's also actually like Ariel Investments there, that like huge asset manager, just raised a new specific fund for like Black and Black owned like venture funds, which was basically good, like venture companies and Black women. So. Really good. It's like $1 billion fund.
Right. Awesome.
So we love that. Yeah. But yeah, and then I think just kind of going through it too, I'm going through the life cycle. We're also, you know, just discussing sort of since now employers are supporting fertility, I think just like how are they going to support mothers in the workplace?
Yes.
And you know, and like the return to the workplace too. Since there's so much more support in fertility care, there probably will be a larger amount of women who do continue to work and have kids because they're able to.
Yeah.
And a report by the female lead sort of highlights how difficult like this transition can be though. So many women face bias, such as the assumption that motherhood will diminish their professional ambitions, as well as difficulty sort of transitioning to more of a flexible work environment, as well as, you know, bias against them for taking their full maternity leave even.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about this and like just how what we're seeing currently in financial services.
Yeah,
I think a lot of mothers when they do come back, especially if you're working in a high demanding finance job and you're in the office 5 days a week, there's really no flexibility in terms of work from home. And I think a lot of the times you can kind of work through that and get past it, but there's a certain point where you just can't. And I've seen like a lot of women kind of leave the industry at this kind of level right after their first child or second child, just because it's physically impossible with the number of hours in a day. So I don't know like what we can do to kind of fix that other than having employers be more flexible, providing this like work-life balance, even when there's like a holiday that, like a bank holiday or something, and you don't take that off, the daycares are closed, so then you obviously like have to take that day off. So little things like that, I think there's something that there's always a lot more to do, and employers just need to be more cognizant.
And we know that women just take the burden of what they call like unpaid work, even if they work, even if they're the breadwinner, like they are, they just take the burden of logistics, organization, management in their home. And like, we're just aware of that. I don't know if that will necessarily ever change. I know every couple is different, but I feel like sometimes it's just how women and men are wired, you know, like living with a man. I just feel like, honestly, I'm just like, women are just so much better at the frickin' planning. Yeah. And I don't know if that's societal or how our brains work or a little bit of both. But I think employers also have to be aware of that. And but also in order for them to retain their top talent, it doesn't make any sense for them to invest, like especially when women are having children and they're covering their fertility and their egg freezing. It's like you've invested, what, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars into this woman that you've trained. She's now 35. She's probably at the absolute peak of her career. She's like, is like a huge asset to you. The only thing that makes sense at that point is to be flexible so she can continue to succeed and be at that job, right? So what does that mean? I think sometimes it needs to take more of like an individual approach.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's like, is it like offering women the opportunity to work from home if they've earned it and get to a certain point? I mean, I definitely think that like, especially senior people, like honestly, as long as like it sometimes doesn't really make any sense for them to be in the office anyway. Like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? And especially with commute times, yeah. Often at that age, like, you're moving out of the city, et cetera. It's like, what are they really doing in the office? Do they have to be there 5 days a week, mm-hmm. even if it's just from a leadership perspective? I think it could even be around promotion, too. I mean, like, if you've hit a certain point of investment into this person, like, yeah, like, offering them more flexibility. And then I think it's also just encouraging also men to take the paternity leave. At least from my perspective, and a lot of my financial firms I worked at, like, men were offered a paternity leave, but, like, mm-hmm. none of them took it, mm-hmm. which I actually thought was really negative. Yeah. Because obviously, like, there's so much, like, bias against, like, vacation and just America mm-hmm. generally.
Yeah.
And, like, there was so much weird bias against paternity leave. And I thought it was actually quite terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was, like, honestly, like, even if it's literally a week, like, they just had a kid.
Oh, my God.
Especially if your wife had, like, a C-section or something. Right. Like, there's huge, like, just, like, bodily recovery. And also, like, it's actually really important, too, for, like, the dad to bond with the baby as well. Mm-hmm. So, like, and actually, there's a lot of studies that show it's, like, can affect, like, your attachment style. Yep. If, like, your dad is not as involved, like, from, like, infancy, sure. et cetera, especially for boys. So it's, like, an interesting psychological idea, too. So I'm, like, maybe it's more of just, like, encouraging men, too, to have flexibility when they need it. Because, honestly, if, like, the men took the flexibility, maybe, like, the women would get it, too.
Yeah, and then it'll be normalized. And women can do it. Yeah, for sure. I think that's super important.
And, I mean, I don't know. Like, Gen Z, I'm sure, will take it over. But then I also... have read 70% of employers have fired Gen Z employees. Did you read this article in Forbes? It was like this big article that like came out last week that was like 70% of employers said Gen Z are the worst employees they've ever had. And I'm like, that cannot be right. Like, I was like, that's insane. Wow. And like, and have fired people of Gen Z, like vastly of Gen Z. And I'm like, I wonder if that's just because their economy's in a bad state and they're firing young people, because young people tend to get fired early.
Yeah.
But I'm like, did people say that about us?
I mean, it's definitely a cultural shift. I think it's less about Gen Z and more about like the work from home environment. Like after like COVID, I think COVID really like made it. So if you had ever worked before COVID, I think you work in a different way than after.
Yeah.
And so like, I mean, I totally see it. Like Gen Z values work-life balance. And I feel like once they start reaching the age of, you know, having children or thinking about families, like they'll definitely, you know, quit if they don't get the flexibility. And so hopefully, I guess in a couple of years, we'll see if the policies really change. But I mean, I've seen a two change recently, like a lot of working mothers would go home at, you know, 5 or 6, take care of their kids and then log back on later. And that's, you know, a small thing that can help.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's a huge thing that can help as well. Or even it's just like, you know, being able to work from home early in the morning, right? Like, okay, I can take my 8 a.m., take my kids to school and then get in at like 9:30.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's like a huge thing. Or just having flexibility, just like because relying on childcare can be really difficult, especially if you don't have like family support in the area.
Yeah.
Or like if your nanny just cancels, like what are you going to, literally what are you going to do?
You have to stay home.
You have to stay home. You have to cancel it. It's like, and then if you have two working parents, like what are you going to do? So it's just like, I guess just allowing for that, even though, and having that understanding, but the answer is like also working moms have been shown to have a lot better soft skills than actually any other employee. So working mom can have greater empathy, leadership skills, problem solving, critical thinking. Cause I guess this motherhood teaches you those skills.
Of course.
I'm sure it does.
Yeah.
And can actually be greater mentors as well. So actually working moms bring a lot of skills that employees without children don't, which is I think something too that maybe our employers should recognize, because I think the like, children have only been seen as like negatives to your work. And honestly, like they're like, okay, well, you have kids, you're gonna have less time to work.
Yeah,
less bottom priority. Line. But I actually, you know, there's actually a positive increase for men who have children. Like they're looking more
for
positive, right? Looking to get married and have kids, they're like, oh, they're settled. They're gonna work way more. They're gonna work a lot harder.
Yeah,
versus have women have empathy. But like women have the same thing,
right?
Like they're gonna have like greater motivation to like get promoted and get a raise, right? They're gonna have greater motivation to stay at an employer that, you know, looks at them highly instead of looking at another job. They're going to have greater, you know, like want for security as well. And so maybe it's sort of transitioning the fact that with men have this positivity bias and women should too.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
And I just think employers need to continue. But I mean, they're hopping really great strides. I love the fact that employers are also even showing young employees that they value the fact that they want a family by covering their egg freezing.
Yeah.
It's lovely. It honestly really is. It's like, it's a really good message. And it's a really good message to show, too, that, like, if women, you know, had to put off children, which then is probably in the driver of the higher fertility rates due to the economy and them wanting to succeed, that they're be able to support it to have later in life. So
yeah,
it's a great thing.
It's definitely a win. And I think tying back to venture and I guess PE, there's a lot of room for new type of products that isn't just specifically egg freezing and IVF that we talked about, but more like ancillary products, focus on like the mental side of things. So it's also an untapped market. If anyone here is trying to start a company, this is definitely a space that you should look into.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's only growing.
Yeah.
It's only growing. It's only expanding. And I think women are just more and more aware of it as well.
Yeah.
And also, as like also too, like not just like obviously heterosexual, but like homosexual couples, it's obviously growing as well. So obviously just like huge increase in the number of homosexual couples who are having children, who want children at an earlier phase, and sort of those services and expansion too.
Yeah, so it's a huge part of life that no one really talks about. And I'm glad that people are talking about it now, especially with the election and everything.
It's totally
very sad, but topical.
Yeah, I know. And like, I mean, I think definitely state by state, we have seen obviously just fears with reproductive rights and women's health care, because, you know, in like obviously the recent like Dobbs like Supreme Court decision just puts a lot of things like IVF under a microscope, and, you know, fear. And I think having like that access to the companies that are still supporting it where they can, gives them a real sense of just psychological safety, despite sort of the risk that they're open to. And it just seems like, you know, as a woman's like reproductive health is like your whole body health is what it seems like. You know, we like, it is our like our hormones and everything are just so different than men.
Yeah.
And we create life, which is like pretty crazy.
It's our bodies. we should have ownership.
I know.
But yeah, if anyone's listening, definitely take advantage of if your employer is offering that kind of service. And I think it's like thinking about it as more of like an insurance perspective. Like you don't know if you're going to use it, and maybe you won't. But it's nice to just have if you are fortunate enough to be able to have that covered.
I agree. And I just hope I just see more companies sort of expand their insurance benefits and expand their coverage so there can be greater access for more women kind of in all economic stages. And I think generally, you know, companies need to kind of just continue to push for broader policies, continue to push for more flexibility, and just support women's choices, and just supporting women's reproductive rights and health. And, you know, it's more just like, you know, supporting your employees. It's supporting really just like the health of your company, because if you're able to support your high performers, support your investment in your high performers at the peak of their career, like they will only be more loyal to you and only perform better. So. Yeah,
agreed.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for listening, guys. And, you know, as always, email us at womansplainpod1@gmail.com or hit us up on Instagram or TikTok if you have any questions.
Great. Thanks for listening.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.